first of all, could you introduce yourself?
I'm Senator Rachel Seward. I'm the Australian Greens spokesperson on family and community services, but also Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander issues.
Okay, and I'm mainly doing this story on the cashless debit card, but I just wanted to put it in context. There's three bills going through, or that are trying to get through at the moment, that are to do with welfare and housing. Is that right?
Yes, there's a number of bills. There's the so-called welfare reform bill, there's payment integrity bill, there's a housing affordability bill, and of course there's the cashless welfare card bill.
Okay, and right now where is the proposed legislation up to?
So in terms of the cashless welfare card, that legislation is still before the House of Representatives. There's a big question mark over whether that's actually going to be dealt with in the truncated House of Reps sitting, which I'm not very sad about, I've got to say. Because obviously I'm not in favour of that legislation, but at this stage it's still in the House of Representatives.
Does that mean it would carry over to the new year?
Well, I'm guessing that.
Yeah.
But who can predict what's going to happen next week?
Yeah, okay. So just briefly, if this legislation is passed, who can expect to be affected if this legislation is passed?
To be honest, it could well affect different groups of people depending on the way it's applied. And the reason I'm saying that is because, well, for a start, the legislation extends the trials, the so-called trials in the East Kimberley and Ceduna, to the point where they really can be no longer considered trials because they don't set an end date. There's no sunset clause like there was before. It also enables the rollout of the cashless welfare card in other areas. At the moment, the budget contains funding for two other trials, and they've named the sites of, you know, that Hervey Bay area, and also the in the Kalgoorlie area in my home state.
Yeah.
But the legislation enables further rollouts. It'll end depending on whether the government's going to fund them. Now, from what we have seen from the government's announcements at the moment is that they're going to be applying it a bit differently in that wide bay area, because it's going to apply to younger people, younger parents. Whereas in Ceduna and Kalgoorlie, it applies to anybody on a working age payment, basically.
Right.
So that's a very, and that includes disability support payments, etc.
Mm. So in the Wide Bay area, the Hinkler electorate, and the Kalgoorlie area, it's applying to anyone on Newstart up to, is it 30?
35.
People on a single parent payment, yes, up to the age of 35?
Yeah. Now, but it's my understanding in Kalgoorlie, it's applying slightly differently again.
Okay. So I know that you were quite involved in the Senate inquiry into this legislation. What's been your main line of inquiry when it comes to the card?
Well, a range of them. I've been very strongly focused on, you know, the evidence base the government is using for this, i.e., is it, does it work? I've also been very focused on, and that links then through to the top-down sort of approach that they're taking. And the evidence that the government's putting forward through the so-called Wave 2 analysis or the AREMA report is very flimsy. They draw, I think, very flawed conclusions from that. So we've been strongly pursuing that. And from our perspective, the evidence base just isn't there. I want to see the evidence base for significant policy changes, particularly one that is so punitive. And we're now hearing the negative impacts it's having on people. And so I've been strongly pursuing that. For a start,
what sort of negative impacts are you hearing about?
Well, people talk. One, if you look at the AREMA report, there's, you know, a large number of people that say that it's had a negative impact on their lives. But then, when you're actually, well, you hear from other people that have spoken, you hear from people directly, and talk to people that are directly impacted. They talk about, for a start, how demoralising and demonising people feel about it. They talk about how they feel they've lost control over the most, you know, some of the most personal decision making. And then you hear about some of the actions that are being taken to circumvent it. For example, doing, you know, I'm aware of people doing shopping for other people, where the government, you know, the government claims, oh, look at this, there's a whole lot of people doing more shopping, and they've even got lists as they walk around the supermarket. Yeah, well, they've got lists because they're doing the shopping for somebody else, and then they pay on their card and get the cash. That's not necessarily a you know, change in behaviour. You hear of other accounts of, you know, long taxi rides that you that get debited to the card. You know, other ways of alcohol coming into communities. The shifting of drinking behaviour. People leaving communities. You know, to some of them. You know, some other areas of people. You've heard stories of prostitution. And that's in, you know, smaller number of cases, but those are some of the things that people hear tell you about. Also, in government claims they do this to reduce, also to reduce humbugging, or so-called humbugging. But you know, there's reports of that significantly increasing. There's reports of increase. In fact, the statistics are showing in some areas in some areas of crime increases in crime, which the government tries to write off. And there's also, in some areas, reports of increase in aggressive behaviours.
So just to the practicalities on the ground, you look at the government website and it says you can use this card anywhere with FPOS to spend 80% of your income, except no grog, no gambling, no cash. What does that mean in reality? What are people experiencing on the ground?
So what I'm hearing on the ground is that people have quite a lot of trouble using it. It gets rejected. They're still having to work out the provisions about how, if you're buying something in a venue where there's, you know, alcohol sold or things that are banned from using the card, you know, there's a process you have to go through to just, you know, to be able to pay for the things that you are allowed to purchase on the card. People talk about, you know, the problems. See, one of the big problems and negative impacts is the lack of access to cash. And so much when people are on a low income, which if you're on income support, ipso facto, you're on a low income, use cash for. And there's a lot of complaints around lack of access to cash. People still complain about the system not working properly, it going down, electricity fails, etc., it not being able to be used, and people still report about not being able to use it elsewhere.
Mm. So that's the kind of micro on the ground. I just wanted to quickly zoom out and go, where did this policy arise from? I mean, I know we have had income management in Australia for a long time, but what is the thinking behind this?
Okay, so you're right. We have had the Northern Territory intervention and income management, which is what the cashless debit card is. It's income management, income quarantining. And I'll just remind you listeners that, you know, the evaluation of the Northern Territory intervention found that of so-called new income management found that it met none of its objectives. So in other words, it didn't work. And as everybody knows, we still have massive disadvantage and inequity in the Northern Territory. So I'll just put that on the record. In terms of where it comes, the latest approach, which is the cashless welfare, I call it cashless welfare card, cashless debit card, or as it was first postulated, the healthy welfare card, comes from the Forest so-called creating parity review. I think what some people's objectives are for people on income support. But of course, the report was particularly about Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples, and so this new approach comes from that report and the pushing of the people that are backing that report.
Okay, and there's this drive to, am I right in hearing, there's a sort of a drive to push it out as far and wide as possible?
Well, from some, you know, the government will deny that, but there's certainly people that are well on the record of wanting to claim it for their area, and also, you know, seeing, for example, claims about wanting to roll it out more widely across the regions, etc.
And what is the motivation? Like, what is the advantage to anybody?
Because I think what they see, unfortunately, although they say, oh, it's not a silver bullet, that is quite clearly how they see it. They see it as a silver bullet, that if you control somebody's expenditure, you'll magically make them change behaviours and address issues like drug and alcohol addiction, gambling. Now, on a separate inquiry, which I think is extremely relevant, which is the government's approach, you know, the government through the welfare reform bill wants to bring in drug testing of new recipients onto income, new recipients or people that are applying for income support. Now, overwhelmingly, the expert advisors, the people that are expert, have that expertise in drug and alcohol addiction, are saying this is a flawed approach. You don't change people's addiction is a health issue. You don't change people's addictions by simply restricting their access to cash. So it's a flawed approach, but that's the philosophy that they're coming from. Clearly demonstrated not to work from the Northern Territory in terms of income management, but also in terms of from the overwhelming evidence that we've got from the experts in drug and alcohol addictions. We need to be treating this issue as a health issue and also addressing the underlying causes of disadvantage. Simply restricting somebody's access to cash does not address their disadvantage. It does not address intergenerational trauma and all those issues that we know have led up to the position where unfortunately people do have drug and alcohol addictions. And I very much agree that we need to be addressing drug and alcohol and gambling addictions. There's no question about that. We need to be helping people, but it needs to be on a health basis and also a trauma-informed basis, not this top-down punitive approach, which has been demonstrated time and time again not to work.
Mm. And when you're talking about disadvantage, we also have the factors of, I believe it's since 1994, New Start payments haven't increased in real terms?
Yeah, we haven't seen. Now, we know, can you, I just need to check what's going on in the chamber. Sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, no, it's okay. Sorry, I apologise for that.
That's okay.
I was just, it seemed to be a bit of a break, which is my signal that I need to get in there, but somebody else has stood up to speak. So
we can just round this off talking
hang on,
about...
Hang on, sorry. Okay, I do need to go into the chamber.
Yeah,
okay.
Well, thank you very much, Rachel.
Okay, thanks.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.